But you've brought up a couple other issues, and I want to address some of the other issues that are going to be addressed in this new administration and how it might affect health and health care. So Trump said on the campaign trail that he would repeal and replace Obamacare, which is the Affordable Care Act, as you noted. He's now saying that he will keep some features like enabling children to stay on their parents' health insurance policy through the age of 26. So requiring insurance companies to cover children up to the age of 26 on their parents' insurance policy. And requiring insurance companies to cover people without regard to pre-existing conditions. So before the Affordable Care Act, an insurance company could refuse to cover you because you had hypertension or because you had had breast cancer or because you had some other condition. And it was like, wait a minute, what is health insurance for if not to cover me when I need health care? And so the Affordable Care Act, it banned insurance companies from imposing or from having policies that could reject people on the basis of pre-existing conditions. Now, Trump gets it that that is an important condition that people aren't going to want to give up. So there are two elements there that he wants to keep, and the question is, how will he keep it? Now, the Congress, a Republican-controlled Congress, is prepared to repeal Obamacare. I don't know that they even have something to replace it with. And so the question is, you know, this was to be one of the early issues that they tackled. But the reality is they cannot repeal Obamacare in both houses because the Democrats still have a sufficient majority to do a filibuster if they try to repeal Obamacare. So what the Republicans are likely to do is to address the Affordable Care Act through a budget reconciliation process. And how this works is that when they propose their first budget, and it will not be within the first 100 days, this is why things aren't going to change overnight, but when they get their first budget together, then in the reconciliation process, you can put forth amendments that address budgetary issues, so they can take parts of the Affordable Care Act that have budgetary implications and call for the repeal of that part of the act. And that cannot be debated for long, and it cannot be amended. And so the idea is that Congress could then pass a budget that would essentially cripple the Affordable Care Act. They would get rid of the exchanges, so people who were getting health insurance on the exchange and they would get rid of the subsidies would no longer have that. They would no longer have health insurance. And it would get rid of Medicaid expansion. But Trump and the Republicans are promising to go beyond that. They want to make Medicaid a block grant to the states. Right now, the federal government does almost like a matching program on Medicaid, except the Affordable Care Act said if you expand it to people who are not already who have not been eligible for Medicaid in the past, if you expand it to cover, for example, single white men at a certain income level, were not eligible in the past. Women and children were, but single white men were not, or single adult men were not. Not white men. Single adult men were not. And the Affordable Care Act said, if you take the state Medicaid expansion, if a state does that, then the government will you would then cover these adult men. You could expand your coverage in other ways. And the federal government will pay 90% of the cost of this, and the state only has to pay 10%. Now, we know not all states did that. And the states that didn't do it were Republican-controlled states.
Right.
But even some Republican-controlled states accepted the Medicaid expansion because they knew it was going to benefit the people and not cost them much. So what a block. And so the federal government will pay for the costs of Medicaid, for the Medicaid people on Medicaid. And now what they're going to do is say, well, the federal government will give the state a bunch of money, a block grant, if you will.
Right.
And the state then has to figure out how to cover whatever number of people they can afford to cover under that.
With X amount of money.
And they will not raise that money, so it will not keep up with inflation, and they probably will even try to cut it back. And they will the initial amount will not be of the amount that states got with the Medicaid expansion. So anybody who's newly enrolled in Medicaid, once this happens, if it happens, will be bumped off of Medicaid and will no longer have Medicaid. So we will go back to having...
That's a fair assumption, because the money won't be there.
Right.
If we have, or if he actually provides the tax cuts that he proposes to provide, where is that money going?
Right. Right.
So if we have these tax cuts, then we won't have the money for Medicaid. That's one of the
right.
issues that you're discussing. That was 12 million Americans, Diana, from 2013 who enrolled
right.
in Medicaid or children's health insurance plans.
Yes.
And
the number
people will be affected.
And the number has actually been almost 20 million who were covered. So we are now going to go back to having probably close to 50 million people uninsured in this country if this happens. Now, the other issue is that Paul Ryan has said that he's going to make he's got two priorities. One is to privatize Medicare. So Medicare is the policy for people who are older, who are 65 or older, and for people who are disabled. And who have end-stage renal disease. And so for Medicare, the privatization of Medicare means that I'm on Medicare, and I do the traditional Medicare program, and most healthcare professionals who know about this stuff do the traditional Medicare program, because you can have your choice of provider, you can get what you need when you need it. But he wants to move it all to Medicaid managed care programs and have the insurance companies take it over. We know the costs go up because insurance companies have much more overhead than Medicare does.
Right.
And it's going to mean that we lose a lot of choice, and we have to, there's more red tape to go through every time you need health care. And so that is very concerning to me as well. So he's behind turning Medicaid into a block grant and privatizing Medicare. And then another concern is the child health insurance program, or CHIP. And it's really a major concern, because we have been able to, because of CHIP at the federal level, to make sure that all children are covered with health insurance. Almost all children in this country are covered, regardless of whether their parents are covered. And CHIP expires, the authorization expires within the next couple of years. They will not renew it. And so we're now going to have poor children, in particular, be uninsured again. And then, of course, control of the Supreme Court is probably going to be up for grabs, and it's expected that there will be challenges to Roe v. Wade once again, and that it will be overturned. So there is so much here that... Really instills fear in my heart and concern and sadness about the direction that we may go in.
Well, you're not alone. Many people are feeling the same way.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Kenya.
I said you're not alone. Many
yeah.
people are feeling the same way, and it's that fear that's going to affect our health.
And hopefully... We'll quit being fearful, and we'll get angry, as we had talked about earlier, and mobilize us. And I think there's a lot to be mobilized around. For example, there's been a growing movement around creating healthy communities and trying to address some of the socioeconomic factors, environmental issues in communities, to promote healthier communities. We know that your zip code probably has more to do with your health than your genetic code. And so...
Yeah.
Or foundations like the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and others are really investing a lot of money in how do we move upstream and reduce income disparities, create jobs in communities, create safe places, make sure there's access to fresh fruits and vegetables, etc. And so, and having healthy, you know, drinking water that's not contaminated, for my God's sake. And so it's astonishing to think that the head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Secretary for Energy and the Interior, could be people who have been executives in the oil and gas business and will roll back advances that we have made in creating healthier environments. We have so much more to do on this, let alone climate change. This is a depressing conversation.
I was saying we're getting more and more depressing.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I think I want to, it is a scary time, and these next 2 to 4 years, we need to be very focused on making sure that we are speaking out on the important issues of our day, and HealthCetera will continue to cover the importance of health and social issues confronting our communities, and not the least of which is the persistent conscious and unconscious bias and its effects on health. So, Kenya, I know that you'll continue to talk about health disparities, and I really thank you for joining me today in this discussion, and hope that our listeners will stay tuned to more on HealthCetera.
I think with our next segment, we need to get a psychologist on, so we can talk about, from their view, what we should be preparing individuals to do when they face someone who's saying something that's derogatory or very cruel.
Great.
How to respond to that in a safe way. I love the idea of the safety pin brigade,
yeah.
And it's almost like a safe house, but a living ambulatory safe house where you know you're not alone. I love that idea. Right now, we need to empower people who are feeling powerless.
Yeah.
And I like that example. I like that strategy. I think it's a step in the right direction. We are not alone. We do have each other. We do have people in this world who care, but unfortunately, we do have people who are angry as well. And they're angry, and they're saying mean and evil things, and somehow we need our leaders to step up,
yeah.
Lead by example,
yeah.
And take a side and say what's right and what's wrong, and be okay with saying, you know what, I might have said something and that was totally wrong. Please do not do what I did.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to hear that from our leaders so that we can take back this country and start to marry our ideals and our behaviors, you know, bring them back together as one.
But Kenya, I guess I would say yes, and each one of us needs to be that leader. Each one of us needs to stand up and say this is not okay, and that we're not going to be silent. We're not going to watch the degradation of health of children and women and families, people in this country and of communities. So I thank
you. And we have that.
When
I look at Black Lives Matter,
yeah.
I see that. People standing up saying we are not going to allow this to happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You need a united front, because just by yourself it can be very intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as an African-American female, the reality is I can say something and end up in jail, and you could say the same thing,
yeah.
And you might just get an ugly look.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to be careful, because we don't want to give anyone the wrong message or any false messages, but definitely we do need to come together. We need to unite. We need to, like you said, demonstrate those leadership qualities in us that, you know, we do have the power to tell people when something is not right, and do it in a respectful way. I love it when I loved it when Michelle Obama said, "When they go low,
we go high."
And we do. We do need to take the high road, because again, I just want to say, people are angry, and angry people do mean things.
Yeah. Well, and I want to. We're out of time, and I want to close today's program by airing an interview that I did earlier today of a nurse in the Congo who emailed me last week about continuing violence in that country and how it's endangering the lives of children and healthcare workers. I mean, it really is disturbing. We don't even hear about this because of all this cacophony around Trump. And unfortunately, this nurse could only do the interview by Skype, and the recording has some technical problems, but I thought it was important to share with listeners what we're not hearing about in the U.S. but needs to be shared. So we're going to go next to my interview with Eli Kasindi Kabululu. He is a nurse in Eastern Congo. So I'm Diana Mason, and you're listening to Health Cetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And remember that Health Cetera is sponsored by the Center for Health Media and Policy, and you can follow us online at healthmediapolicy.com. And I want to thank Kenya Beard for joining me in today's conversation. Thank you, Kenya. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, definitely a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And now my interview with Eli Kasindi Kabululu.